The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Chris Barnes.
She was on duty, serving this city, protecting people, doing what she believed in and doing the job she loved.
But the NYPD veteran that New York Mayor Bill de Blasio is referring to has died after being shot overnight. Here's more from Scott Pringle.
Police say about 12:30 this morning, suspect Alexander Bonds approached a mobile police command vehicle at East 183rd and Creston Avenue, shooting through the window, sending a bullet into an officer's head. Bonds was shot and killed by police nearby. The officer, Miasotos Familia, pronounced dead in the hospital, and the police commissioner calling this an assassination.
President Trump is in flight to Poland, where he'll make his first major public address in Europe on Thursday in Warsaw. On Friday, he'll be attending the G20 summit in Hamburg, Germany. This is USA Radio News.
Here's the scoop on garden soil. Sometimes
cathedrals and squares of your great cities. Poland lives, Poland prospers, and Poland prevails.
Earlier at a joint press conference with the Polish president, Trump stressed the need to protect Poland and all of Eastern Europe, also thanking Poland for paying its fair share towards NATO. Trump is lashing out, though, against former President Obama. At the morning news conference in Warsaw, he was asked about Russian interference in the U.S. presidential election and said Obama did nothing after learning about that possible Russian meddling. This is USA Radio News.
Staples knows that when the leave-behinds for your sales call get left behind at your office, it's time. When you need to print 30 pages and you're 300 miles from the office, it's time. And when the intern packed the Harrington file, not the Farrington file.
Oh, my bad.
It's definitely time. And it's times like these when you can count on Staples. Access your files from email, the cloud, or USB, and then print, copy, fax, or scan them, and get back to business fast. Visit your nearby Staples. It's pro time.
I have to get to sleep.
Tom had a stressful day, and now he can't shut down at bedtime.
Need sleep.
His president noted the significance of this visit with Vladimir Putin, saying it is a major step in bilateral ties. Russia and China share similar views on the Syrian conflict and on North Korea. Both countries are strongly opposed to the U.S. anti-missile shield in South Korea. This is the third time that the two presidents meet this year. The visit comes just a few days ahead of the G20 leaders' summit in Hamburg. Julia Lipova, Moscow.
And prized NBA free agent forward Gordon Hayward is going to go to the Boston Celtics, announcing that last evening. He'd also been considering the Miami Heat and his former Utah Jazz. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
It is 9:05. It's time for Hunt Chamber Radio weather. 73 degrees right now in Flemington, overcast skies, no chance of precipitation. Weather Underground says that today will be partly sunny, highs in the lower 80s, east winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Partly cloudy in the evening tonight, then becoming mostly cloudy, lows in the lower 60s, east winds around 5 to 10 miles an hour. On Thursday, cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the upper 70s, east winds around 5 miles an hour, chance of rain 50%. Friday, partly cloudy, mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms, showers likely mainly in the morning, humid with highs in lower 80s. Mostly sunny on Saturday, chance of showers and thunderstorms, 30% chance, lower 80s. Sunny and lower 80s on Sunday, mostly sunny, mid-80s on Monday. Temperatures in the area, 73 in Raritan, 74 in Reddington, 73 in Kingwood, 74 in Frenchtown, 71 in Pattonburg, 75 up in Asbury, 71 up in Bedminster. Good morning, Hunterdon. That is Hunterdon Chamber Radio Weather.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunter and Huntshimmer.com. I have my guest in the studio, host of Modern Design, interior designer of Maven Hill, and finally, breakout author, and that is Richard Scuderi. We're going to talk all about his book and the whole writing process. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. That was a very generous opening. I don't know if I can live up to some of those things. You're making me feel very important.
Well, you are important. You absolutely are important. And we appreciate you being here at the radio. It's great to have all of our shows, but your show is started out extremely popular right off the bat because of your network of people that like to listen to and want to learn more about interior design. Mm. And my favorite part about it is, actually, it's two pieces. The first one is that you invite people to offer their challenges to you, and you accept their requests. My other one is that you look for, to me, interior design is an enigma, which I guess is why you're in business. But one of the best things about it is that you're frugal about it. You're trying to find a good budget, but make it really look good for people. And I think that's what makes you so successful.
Well, I think one of the reasons that I've survived, which I still call financial
Armageddon.
Well, financial Armageddon. Because to tell you the truth, many of the people that I was in business with, I've been doing Maven Hill Designs for 20 years now. In fact, this is our 20th year.
That's great.
In the dot-com days when people were just spending money like water, it was wonderful. I couldn't answer the calls fast enough. That was the biggest problem. Right. But as October of 2008 came and things changed and the banking industry and the frenzy, I had to reinvent myself. And part of reinventing myself was to say, yes, you'll always need to do things in your home, even if they're maintenance. Right. But let's do this well. Let's do this smartly. Let's do this in an economical and realistic way. So we are spending money towards a house, which may be worth less money than it was last year, but we're making wise choices. So that's really, it's a good thing to do that, but it's sort of the economy forced me to adapt and change.
That's great. And
his president noted the significance of this visit with Vladimir Putin, saying it is a major step in bilateral ties. Russia and China share similar views on the Syrian conflict and on North Korea. Both countries are strongly opposed to the U.S. anti-missile shield in South Korea. This is the third time that the two presidents meet this year. The visit comes just a few days ahead of the G20 leaders' summit in Hamburg. Julia Lipova, Moscow.
And prized NBA free agent forward Gordon Hayward is going to go to the Boston Celtics, announcing that last evening. He'd also been considering the Miami Heat and his former Utah Jazz. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
It is 9:05. It's time for Hunt Chamber Radio Weather. 73 degrees right now in Flemington, overcast skies, no chance of precipitation. Weather Underground says that today will be partly sunny, highs in the lower 80s, east winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. partly cloudy in the evening tonight, then becoming mostly cloudy, lows in the lower 60s, east winds around 5 to 10 miles an hour. On Thursday, cloudy with a chance of showers and thunderstorms, highs in the upper 70s, east winds around 5 miles an hour, chance of rain 50%. Friday, partly cloudy, mostly cloudy with a chance of thunderstorms, showers likely mainly in the morning, humid with highs in lower 80s. Mostly sunny on Saturday, chance of showers and thunderstorms, 30% chance, lower 80s. Sunny and lower 80s on Sunday, mostly sunny, mid-80s on Monday. Temperatures in the area, 73 in Raritan, 74 in Reddington, 73 in Kingwood, 74 in Frenchtown, 71 in Pattonburg, 75 up in Asbury, 71 up in Bedminster. Good morning, Hunterdon. That is Hunt and Chamber Radio Weather.
Lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. Let me repeat, lose 20 to 40 pounds in 40 days, guaranteed. This is not a crazy diet or exercise program. No drugs, hormones, or shots. You can lose 20 to 45 pounds in 40 days with Nutrimost Resonant Frequency Technology to measure 2,800 of your body's key biomarkers. Using NRF, they can find and correct the cause of your weight problem by measuring factors affecting weight gain, including metabolism, fat burning, fat storage, appetite, detoxification, and hormonal regulation. It's safe, fast, easy, and effective, and you won't walk around hungry or have cravings. It's even doctor supervised. Schedule a body composition analysis and consultation. You can be transformed in 40 days guaranteed. This is a limited time offer, so they can't wait to see you look great.
So call 888-718-7077. That's 888-718-7077. Or visit njthin.com. That's njthin.com.
Welcome back to Good Morning Hunter and Huntshimmer.com. I have my guest in the studio, host of Modern Design, interior designer of Maven Hill, and finally, breakout author, and that is Richard Scuderi. We're going to talk all about his book and the whole writing process. Good morning, Richard. How are you?
Good morning, Chris. That was a very generous opening. I don't know if I can live up to some of those things. You're making me feel very important.
Well, you are important. You absolutely are important, and we appreciate you being here at the radio. It's great to have all of our shows, but your show is started out extremely popular right off the bat because of your network of people that like to listen to and want to learn more about interior design. Mm. And my favorite part about it is actually is two pieces. The first one is that you invite people to offer their challenges to you, and you accept their requests. My other one is that you look for, to me, interior design is an enigma, which I guess is why you're in business. But one of the best things about it is that you're frugal about it. You're trying to find a good budget, but make it really look good for people. And I think that's what makes you so successful.
Well, I think one of the reasons that I've survived, which I still call Armageddon. Financial Armageddon. Because to tell you the truth, many of the people that I was in business with, I've been doing Maven Hill Designs for 20 years now. In fact, this is our 20th year.
That's great.
In the dot-com days when people were just spending money like water, it was wonderful. I couldn't answer the calls fast enough. That was the biggest problem. Right. But as October of 2008 came and things changed and the banking industry and the frenzy, I had to reinvent myself. And part of reinventing myself was to say, yes, you'll always need to do things in your home, even if they're maintenance. Right. But let's do this well. Let's do this smartly. Let's do this in an economical and realistic way. So we are spending money towards a house, which may be worth less money than it was last year, but we're making wise choices. So that's really it's a good thing to do that, but it's sort of the economy forced me to adapt and change.
That's great. And that makes you have longevity. It also made you have a growth spurt, I imagine.
Sure. I've been very lucky that I have multiple locations. Mm-hmm. I have been for the last 3 years at 1 U.S. Highway 31 in Flemington. Unfortunately, the strip mall there has been purchased and is going to close shortly. Okay. So I'm relocating. My new location is going to be 176 202 and south in Ringo's.
Okay.
So I'm working on this week on the move, but definitely want to keep something in Flemington.
And you just opened something recently too.
I did. I have a second location in Maplewood, New Jersey. If you're familiar,
yes,
near the Short Hills Mall at the Maplewood train station. There's a lovely downtown there called Maplewood Village, and I'm at 191B Maplewood Avenue, Maplewood, New Jersey, carrying things like furniture and accessories and sort of leave with a bag, spending $15 or, more, but there's always something to look at. I get new things every week, and it's kind of a fun environment to be in. So I sort of juggle between the two.
And I'd be remiss in talking about your design capabilities. I've heard on casual conversations that you've been involved in some pretty hefty projects.
Actually, I've been very lucky because it seems to me that when you do a project, specifically in design, when you do a project, that's your advertising. And if you've done it well, and hopefully I have done some of these things well, they seem to lead to other things.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been lucky that's sort of been the transition. So I've got to do some very big projects. Locally here, one of the ones that probably commercially you might be familiar with is Metropolitan Seafood.
Yep.
When Mark Drabish of Metropolitan Seafood decided to go from his modest store in Clinton to that big space, which was formerly CWI Kitchens, he took me on to do the transition, working with the architects to create a look. The architect did a very good job with designing the core of the space, but then he wanted to create something that was a little bit more elegant and had a little bit of an industrial edge. We did the polished concrete floors, but to come up with a color palette and a look for the space.
Right.
That was a fun project to work on. I also work for the Boyle Hotel Corporation. They have three hotels in New Jersey, one in Murray Hill, one in Westfield, and one in Morristown, and I'm working on those projects. I've just completed the ballroom at the Murray Hill Inn, and I will have to say it looks really, really good.
Wow.
Smashing. So I do a lot of bigger commercial projects, restaurants. I did the Thai Kitchen on Prince Rogers Road in Bridgewater, New Jersey.
Right.
So I do some interesting and unusual projects, and it's kind of fun.
That's great, and it leads each. You're open to the fact that by doing these projects, you have the confidence that those things could lead to potentially other.
Sure, and they usually do. I'm very passionate about design. I'm somebody that works all the time. I worked yesterday.
I think that's pretty obvious.
But I like, people say I'm driven. I think I'm lazy, actually. But people say, how do you do? I was with somebody last night at a dinner afterwards, and I said, I don't think you could do one more thing. You do so many things, I don't think you could do one more thing. But I feel if you're here, you have to contribute. And I don't want to just take up the carbon footprint. I want to do something with my life. I want to be able to say, this is what he did.
Right.
And when my day comes where it's over, they're going to say, he did something with his life.
Well, that's an excellent transition. Mm-hmm. So somehow, some way, you shoehorned in all of that for 20 years writing a book.
Sure.
It's called The Lonely Boy.
Mm-hmm.
And you would come by last week and let me know that it was out there on the book in Amazon.
Sure.
So, and you're constantly got to be with people, with architects, you're with customers. So, where's the lonely boy from?
I think I said, people are like an onion. Someone said once, people are like onion. They're of many layers.
Right.
So part of the layers of me, and something that I feel comfortable now disclosing, is that I've had a lifelong struggle with depression. It's something that started for me as an early child, and something that I've just sort of kept on the QT and taken care of. But in recent years, as it often does with a mental illness, as you get older, it often gets worse. Mm-hmm. And, life changes, you lose people and so on. And sometimes it becomes a problem. What I found in my later years, where some tragedies did happen to me, and you'll read them in the book, is that I wasn't so good at the coping skills later on, and I needed to get more help. And the problem I found, and probably the biggest reason I wrote the book, is that depression, unlike other illnesses, there's not necessarily a clear path to treatment and resolution. I've had a couple of big health problems in my life. When I was 27 years old, I was diagnosed with a thyroid tumor, and I had lost half my thyroid. I'm fine now. I'm no longer even on Synthroid, but it did a lot to my body.
Sure.
But I talk about having an illness.
Yeah.
There was a beginning, a middle, and an end. I wasn't feeling well. I was diagnosed. They did surgery. They did treatments. And then I had a healing. When you have a mental illness like depression, it doesn't go away. It's
right.
something that you constantly have to treat and work at. And mental illnesses are tricky. They change. The circumstances change. They're very debilitating.
Yeah, and then you couple it with the fact that you are a man,
mm-hmm. which is a big deal.
Which is and like it or not, and I heard Ruth Altamore Roll explain this not too long ago. There's a stigma
sure.
associated with revealing that sure. you have these emotional feelings,
especially as a male. I think, and that's one of the reasons I really, really ultimately said, I want to be the one that does this. I have found, even so far as the book is only really out as a paper book, paperback book about July 1st. It came out a couple of days earlier, but that's what it's just recently out in paperback.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm already getting such feedback from people. In fact, I got a phone call yesterday from a woman that reached out to me about her struggles with depression. I find so far that reaching out has only been females, and I hope other males will say, you know what? I can't even like go out with my kids and play with them because I don't feel right. I have
right.
issues.
Right.
There's such a stigma with having depression or any sort of mental illness because I think it's been portrayed as something that's, you know, odd or bizarre or so on.
Sure.
But statistics tell us that 1 in 4 people will have some form of mental illness in their lifetime. 1 in 4 is tremendous. And there's yeah. a lot of people, I think, suffering unnecessarily because of the stigma. And that's why I sort of wanted to put my name on that. I don't think my parents signed on to say, oh, my son is the voice of mental illness. But I do think if I can bring some healing and some uh-huh. health, then maybe I've done something with my life.
Cool. We're going to take a quick break, Richard. I think you know the drill. We'll be right back with more of Good Morning Hunterdon, Richard Scuderi, and his book, The Lonely Boy, right after this.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HunterdonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
I'm your ice cream man, stop me when I'm passing by.
It's time to visit Pambee's, the newest ice cream shop in town. Pambee's Purely Delicious Ice Cream, Gelato, and Sorbet, made in Hunterdon County from unique blends of natural extracts, herbs, and spices. Created with a rich, creamy texture bursting with flavor. Tickle your palate with exotic flavors such as rose cardamom, hot mango, and ginger lemon, or satisfy your craving for dark chocolate, pecans, and caramel. Located on Route 31 south of Clinton, Pambee's, purely delicious.
See, now all my flavors are guaranteed to satisfy.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon, HunterdonChamber.com. Richard Scuderi wrote a book entitled Lonely Boy. And Richard, in preparation for this show, you would inform me that that song was the momentum, the impetus for the title.
It is. It is the impetus. And you know what? I love that song. I mean, that song has been around forever. Do you remember the song?
I do remember that song.
Someone said to me the other day in passing, I said, I love that song. It's a rock song. And they said, no, it's like bubblegummy. I don't see it as bubblegummy. I think that song is really, there's like, to me, there's a soul to that song. And unfortunately, Andrew Gold passed away.
Last year.
Yeah, as a young guy, which is very sad.
Yeah.
But he was very talented. I also believe he wrote the theme song to the Golden Girls. I was Googling him.
Thank you for being a friend.
I think he was the writer of that song.
Yes,
as
he
well.
Was. Yes.
And he was from a musical family in California.
Yep.
Very talented. But that song spoke to me. It came sort of at a point in my life and my maturity. I think I was maybe in seventh grade.
Mm-hmm.
And I just felt when he was saying some of the words that he was talking about me. And I found that very identifiable. And I knew that when the title, it was very obvious that I was going to call it The Lonely Boy. And a lot of people didn't want me to call it The Lonely Boy because I'm very fortunate that although I don't have a lot of family, I do have good people around me that really do love me, and they don't want it to be sad. Right. And I don't want you to read The Lonely Boy and be sad. You know, I went to a wedding last week, and a woman came up to me, and she touched my face, and she said, "I'm so sorry." I'm like, no, that's not the point of it. It's not the pain. It's the resolution. It's the success. It's the triumph.
So this is a triumph of kind of ridding yourself of that internal turmoil.
Sure. You know, and someone on Facebook said to me, a friend, Deborah, she says, you know, you're not that person anymore. And I'm like, yes, that's exactly it. You don't have to let your past become your present. You certainly can evolve. And I think part of it is having that past to go through things. I think life gives us struggles on purpose to make us better. And that's the point of surviving depression. So many of us have some levels of depression, and that you can come out of it. And when you're in the darkness, I want to give people hope. Now, I'm not saying I'm cured and everything is wonderful. I take it day by day, just like everyone else does. And I certainly could relapse or have other problems. But you don't have to keep your head under the pillow. You can come up, and that there is life after a depression diagnosis.
Sure. Now, that song, obviously, when you heard it in seventh grade, you weren't thinking of writing a book back then.
No, I wasn't.
You
I
identified
just,
with it.
Right.
But how did you remember when you were finally going through the writing process that all of a sudden you connected back with that piece of music?
You know, it did. It is in the. I'm somebody that has very good recall, and people will laugh at me, and they get nervous because they're like, Rich remembers everything. And I have a very good recall, especially of the past.
Right.
As I age, I'm sure some of that will go away. But I have a good recall of the past. And those words, especially because I have a nephew who lives in Hunterdon County, and when it's said about your sister grows up, she marries a man that gave her a son, and my sister's firstborn son is my godson and somebody who's very dear in my heart. Mm-hmm. And I guess that sort of kept it, even though I haven't seen him in many years, that kept it in the back of my mind, I guess, and that kept it ever present.
Okay. So when people talk about depression... Mm-hmm. And people use the term pretty loosely. You know, I'm depressed.
Exactly.
You know, it's a depressing day, that type of stuff. I don't think people understand the true depth of darkness that you're talking about here. And I don't know if we want to get into that deep a conversation, but I, if there's some way that you can differentiate how, you know, a person saying I'm having a bad day versus some of the what you've been going through.
Sure, and I think that that's quite important. In fact, I would have to say, Chris, in all honesty, if I wasn't diagnosed with depression, I don't think I would have understood it. Because, you know, life is a series of joys and sorrows, and it is normal to have sorrow. You know, your grandfather passes away, you're going to have sorrow.
Right.
You know, things happen. You have a health issue. There's sorrow. You lose your job. Their sorrow. If you don't react with some sadness, then I think you're not sort of balanced as a person. Depression is something completely different. Depression is not being able to function. Depression is panic attacks where you need to go to an emergency room because you can't control your breathing. It is the mind's sort of breakdown, if you will, to a certain degree where you are not able to function. It is normal to feel sadness and joy and everything in between, so you're not necessarily depressed. But when you have a continued pattern of not being able to focus, not being able to feel joy, not being able to do things in your life, then sometimes you need some help.
Right. When did you realize that your internal feelings were not matching up with what...
You know
what is quote unquote the norm, which doesn't really exist. But.
No, exactly. Or you know, like a happy kid.
Right.
So for me, it was it came about by a seventh grade teacher, Mr. Veda, who was my seventh grade teacher, had a conversation with my mother, and she said, "I think he's depressed. I think there's a depression there in him."
Wow.
And she was very, very concerned on how to address depression, especially in such a young mind, you know, you really want to attack it the right way. So that's the, I guess, the onset, because it wasn't something I was even conscious I was in. It was
a person who's afflicted with it thinks it's
their norm.
It's their norm.
Right. And you certainly you don't have the communication skills when you're in seventh grade to discuss something like that. But he saw something there.
Do you know what that was?
I don't. I wasn't. I think I was on the basketball team. I was doing all the activities that everybody else was doing. So I don't know. But I guess he had a sensitivity, and he just said, "I think he has depression."
Okay. And what did mom do? She just kind of waved her hand and said,
no,
"He'll get over it."
No, I don't want to give too much away in the book.
Sure, no,
there's a story that
goes
along with it. But I did have a conversation with someone to sort of talk about it. One of the things, and this is kind of telling, one of the things that person told me to do was when I was feeling certain things that I should write them. So that was the impetus of the book, because the book is basically...
Did you have those notes from back then?
Oh, very much so.
That's amazing.
So I'm somebody from that day on when that person told me to get a diary, which I did, and keep it in a locked drawer, which I did, something that I've kept all these years, and it's those notes that eventually became the book known as The Lonely Boy.
Now, how long did you go back to review them, or did you kind of put it away and know it was there but never really wanted to review it?
Exactly that. You know, you go through different periods of maturity and things become priority, but it was always there somewhere that I had those notes and I had those things, and I took it from house to house. But many, many years passed where I didn't sort of dwell or even look at that.
What were you talking about in terms of volume of information?
Oh, a lot. Different books, different journals, paper. I have some of it. Some of it was in, you know, these sort of legal pads.
Sure.
And
sure.
Some of it was in pencil and so on. There are big gaps when I did it of years and years that were missing. But again, I happen to have very good recall. So when I decided I was finally going to actually do the book, and we'll talk about that later, how that came about, that I said,
sure,
I want to actually do something with this. I had enough that I was ready.
Those gaps, were they periods of a higher, more, I won't say, it's not euphoric, but just a more... a better place as
no,
opposed
you know,
to?
No, you're very on the mark with that. The periods of gaps were often triumphs for me or periods of happiness. And it's been said that artists like Elton John and other artists did their best work when
yes.
they were in the darkness.
Absolutely.
And when they were happy, they didn't have that same thing. And
right.
I see how art can happen that way.
Right.
So it was the gaps, the many years of gaps where the up times, the building my home and success in business and joy that I didn't feel the need to write. Writing for me is cathartic.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. It is for many people. I happen to be involved in music, and I did exactly that. You'd have those really interesting perspectives, emotional feelings, and you're writing it down, and it comes out in places you just didn't realize.
Pain gives you depth, I think.
It does.
Yeah.
It does. But what's interesting to me is, did you recognize that as when the gaps were a positive in your life? Because you weren't writing them down, were you getting a balance of it? Or when you only saw the notes, you said, most of my upbringing, most of my early life was more dark.
You know, it was only when I wasn't very conscious when the gap years were happening. I was just happy that I was happy.
Sure.
It was only when I went to put the dots together for the missing years that I kind of figured that all out. You know what I mean?
Right.
One of the things that was very helpful for me, because I wanted to make sure, because I'm 52 years old, so those things happened a very long time ago, some of them,
right.
is that I did a timeline. So I went back. I went back to April 21st, 1965. And I did a timeline, and I looked at what was going on in the world each year, and then it brought back things of how I dealt with things in the world and at the time. You know, I remember seeing – I do remember the tail end of being at school, and they still had bomb shelters in 1970 and 71 and 72.
Sure. Yeah.
Some of those things.
Yeah,
so it was able – so keeping a timeline and knowing what was happening in the world in 1972 – and what was happening to Richard in 1972 made it, I think, a better book.
Right. You know? Now, when you started to review your notes, and this, now we're getting into kind of the writing process.
Sure.
Did you realize that you had probably some intuitive coping mechanisms in there?
Yeah, I'm somebody that, you know, I was, my degree actually is in broadcasting from Montclair University, and we were studying in one of the communication classes, and this stands out in my mind, and my professor in this big college class, they were talking about empathy, and right. He was, Dr. Tom Vinodol was giving a lecture on empathy, and in the middle of his lecture, he stopped and he says, they're talking about what an empath is. And he goes, Richard, that's you. So he actually, and he didn't really know me that well. I was just a student, right? We didn't have that sort of a relationship. And he stopped and he said, you are an empath. You are somebody that feels things strongly and you articulate them. And I thought, wow, you know, and that's kind of stayed with me. So I think I have a sixth sense or an inner sense of things. I'm often able to predict things before they happen. I couldn't be a psychic because it's not consistent.
Right.
But I have often called things where people said to me, oh, my God, how could you know that?
Right.
Cousins of mine that were married for 30 years, we went to their house in San Diego for dinner. My cousin made a beautiful, beautiful dinner for us, and her husband was raving about, you know, how talented she was. I walked in, I got into the car, and I said, they're getting divorced. and I was with other people, and they're like, you're an idiot. What do you mean? It was a great night. They're getting divorced. Within 4 weeks, they were separated, and they've been divorced for 15 years.
Wow. You must have tuned into something else.
Yeah, it's not something I can call, and I wish I could help people with it, right? I wish I could give people some comfort with it. But I say in the book, I just, if I feel somebody, I guess I am an empath, I do feel their pain, maybe because I went through pain, but if I feel that somebody's on a bad track, I in a subtle way, I try to sort of guide them if I can a little bit.
Sure. This is a little bit off the topic of focusing on your writing, but somehow the empath correlates with the interior design?
You think so? Well, I guess maybe. Sure. There's a lot of psychology in interior design, and I will tell you, having met so many families, and some you become very attached to, because when you're an interior designer slash contractor, you're sitting on people's beds. You're meeting their kids. You're seeing what's happening in their life and so on.
Right.
And you learn why people are taking a stranger into their house to make their house better. Often there are psychological reasons behind
sure.
it.
And yeah. then you're probably using some of your designs to change or modify that path.
Absolutely.
So,
absolutely.
Very neat. So yeah. somehow this, it looks like your work is somehow been born out of this, and now it's going on a second path, being an author and writing about this particular affliction. So let's get back to the writing process now.
Sure.
So when, you know, you put this to bed, you had the notes sitting there somewhere mm-hmm. for years, and when does it strike you, because you obviously didn't have a lot of downtime,
sure.
to just say, I gotta start putting this to paper?
Well, actually, unfortunately, it's a tragedy or a series of tragedies that led me to this.
Mm-hmm.
In December of 2010, I had my second health issue in my life, when I've only had two, but that I was diagnosed with a massive brain tumor, and I was losing
wow.
my eyesight, and it was bad. It was massive, and I had to do something quickly. And my brain tumor was so, it was benign, but it was so aggressive and so large
right.
That I was to be blind, which I eventually was, quickly. So we went to the top surgeons all over the country, Johns Hopkins, NYU, all the best, Mass General, all the best hospitals that specialized in brain tumors. But when I went to see them, all of them said the brain tumor is so large, they felt that I would have to live with a partial brain tumor and go through radiation and be cut from ear to ear.
Right.
And there was no guarantee that I would regain my vision,
mm-hmm.
which I was quickly losing. But I found a doctor at New York Presbyterian Hospital. His name is Dr. Theodore Schwartz. And he does a special procedure where they go through the nasal cavity to the brain. They use computers, and they deflate the tumor like a balloon and pass it through your nasal passages. So it was quite an ordeal and quite a surgery. And on a Monday morning ahead of schedule, I woke up legally blind.
Uh-huh.
And within an hour and a half, I was in the emergency room at New York Presbyterian, which I laid blind for a day and a half on a gurney. They didn't even have a room to put me in the emergency room. And I had my surgery, and thank God eventually did get my vision back, and I am back in the world again.
Tremendous. What a tremendous story. Still doesn't get your pen to paper, though.
No, I mean, so let me. That was something I should have continued on. So in that process, my dad took that very hard. My mom had died when I was very young, so my dad took that hard. And within 6 weeks of my brain surgery, my father had a massive hemorrhagic stroke.
Oh.
And is currently still with us, but in a vegetative state. And the culmination of the brain surgery and my father's stroke and some other things that went on, which will be revealed in the book.
Sure.
It was just
just one of those.
Yeah, right. So it was so overwhelming for me that the depression kicked in, the worst it ever was. And I was having really hard times functioning. That was when it was at its sort of worst that it had ever been. And I needed something to do with myself. I wasn't working as much because I couldn't drive.
Right.
And I was having, you know, issues and complications and trying to save my father. So that was the beginning of saying to myself, what's my life all about? I faced my own mortality with the brain surgery and then clearly the mortality of what had happened to my father. And that's when I started to examine my life and what my life was really all about. That's when I went back to the notes, and that started, to answer your question, that started the process of writing this book. It was the tragedies that did it.
So there you have it, exactly what you said has been in other artists for years.
Sure.
Do you see you've already explained a little bit previous discussions that now you're able to be a little more objective about your depression.
Sure.
Do you see a clear delineation on either side of 2010?
I don't quite get that.
Well, in terms of how you felt about it, about yourself and your and not being able to, in a cathartic way, release this concern, and now all of a sudden you did
this
introspection.
Oh, very much so. It hasn't been a the past years of my life have not been happy, but I've learned so much from them. I think I'm more objective. I'm less judgmental, and I'm wiser. Oh, absolutely. A lot of the growth of my life, I would say, has come from 2010 to now.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, all right, so you had the desire to put this book together, but not everybody's an author.
Right.
Even such a large project, and you've done other large projects before.
Sure.
But this is not, is this something you've even contemplated? Is it something that you learned how to do?
No, not really. What had happened was, is as part of the issues with my dad, I started to have insomnia. And that's often many people that suffer from depression have insomnia.
Mm-hmm.
So I would find I would be up all hours of the night, and I kind of was, you know, just online and, you know, on Facebook and doing whatever and so on. And once I was able to focus that time at night, and most of my writing happened in the wee hours of the morning, as the song says, began to become a positive for me.
Right.
Feeling so sad when I was able to do something and make something of something, that was when things started to make sense to me. And it just sort of, in 2010, I didn't say one day I'm going to be an author. I sort of fell into the book, if you will.
Right.
It's something that just sort of kind of came out of me, if you will.
Well, but writing a book doesn't happen in one evening.
No,
there's a couple authors that maybe can do that.
Right.
But for most of us, that's not even a possibility. So, you know, I'm sure there was some opportunity for doubt of, why am I doing this? You know, it's too big a project.
Right.
Is somebody really going to buy this?
Oh, sure. You know, I didn't, now this probably sounds strange now, right? But I didn't write the book to even be a book. I didn't even know if it could be a book. I knew I was in terrible pain. I was having anxiety, which is the killer when you have depression.
Right.
And it calmed me for some reason, besides the medication that I was on at the time to calm me from the anxiety portion of depression.
Right.
The writing somehow was cathartic, and it calmed me. So when I was up at 2 and 3 o'clock in the morning and didn't want to wake anybody else up, it was something that I could do that kept my mind active. And I did it more for just my own calmness, if you will, my own contentment in my life, not even knowing if it ever would be a book, and sort of, in a way, backed into it. I didn't go from chapter one to the end. Right. I just wrote what I was feeling at the time and where I was. And then slowly, it took about 4 years to complete the book. It kind of turned into a book.
And ironically, it's cyclical, because this is exactly what you did back when you were in seventh grade.
Right.
Where you had to write to get those initial depression feelings out.
Exactly. It's all about the writing.
It's all about the writing.
I encourage people, in fact, I don't have children, but if I did have children myself, I would really encourage them to write. Whatever they, you know, and if they don't want to share that with anybody, let that be their thing. Writing, well, at least for me, writing is cathartic.
Yeah.
Yeah. It helps.
You need some type of outlet.
I agree.
Whether it's meditation or...
Sure.
Or conversation or you know, the classic therapy where you go and speak to somebody about these things. But the thing with therapy is that you have to schedule that.
Right.
With writing, as soon as you feel the need to do it, you can just pick up a pen and paper and go.
And it's free.
And it's free.
There's no copays.
And hey, by the way, it might actually lead to a book. You never know.
You know, to tell you the truth, I recently, and the paperback is out just about the first, so it's just come out.
Okay.
But I got my first, the other day, I got my first five-star on Barnes & Noble. I got my first five-star review, and I was like, wow. That's when I realized it really is a book. You know, like I wrote a book. So that part of it was very, it was kind of a good moment for me.
That's good. That's good. So you're starting to get some feedback from it.
Yeah.
What other feedback are you getting that's starting to tell you that you're making, this isn't just for you?
Well, first I want to say, and this is certainly not a braggy type of thing, but I decided to, once it was, the manuscript was finished and I had it for a while and I got the courage to maybe do something about it, I went online and I looked at different publishers and how you could submit, if there was a portal and if they would even accept. Mm-hmm. Not all traditional publishers accept unsolicited works.
Right.
But the ones that did, there were seven of them that I thought would be right for my book, which is really a self-help book. I sent it to seven publishers, and I got seven packets, which were all that we want your book, seven offers of seven publishers.
Holy cow.
So I was like, and the offers varied very much, but it led me to believe that, well, although maybe I wasn't a classically trained writer, there must have been something maybe in the content that they thought was maybe interesting. So that sort of was the first kind of sign about that.
Uh-huh.
But on the other end, after the book has been published now, I consistently get a couple of things from people. And one is that they said it's an easy read, which for me, I find a compliment. Probably not everybody does, but I do, because, you know, when you're describing your life and your experience as a writer, your biggest fear is the person on the other end doesn't understand it because they didn't live it.
Right.
So they said it was an easy read, which I have heard consistently.
That's good.
And the other thing that I've heard consistently is they felt they heard my voice in the words when they read it. And that a friend of mine, Audrey, told me yesterday. She said, Richard, I've known you since you were 17. And she said, I felt like I heard your words every time I read a line in the book. So that was kind of nice, you know.
That's very nice.
Yeah.
When you get the feedback from people, and the easy read, by the way, to me sounds like you're able to communicate in a progressive manner.
Yeah, but
so,
I also
and they're able to, I wouldn't say predict, but they're able to follow your train of thought.
Sure, but also, and I want to interject this because this is important.
Right.
The subject of depression is very dark.
Right.
This is not a dark book. There's humor in this book. There's very just sort of weird coincidences that have happened to me with famous people, with circumstances and time. A lot of interesting things have happened. It's not a hard read. You're not going to have a box of tissues. Mm. Well, maybe my friends might, but for the most part, you're not going to. It's not this depressing, dark book.
Sure.
It's actually kind of. I think it's kind of fun, and it is a light read. And I wanted to pass it along, Chris, to your listeners if they want to buy The Lonely Boy, that it's something that's. I hope it's an enjoyable read, and that's what I've gotten back consistently.
Good. We're going to give out the where you can find it.
Sure.
In just a little bit. We're at the quarter to 10 mark. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll talk with Richard Scuderi a little bit more about his endeavors.
Hi, I'm Joe Peters of Weikert Realtors. Buying or selling a property can be one of the most expensive undertakings you face in your lifetime, and selecting the right realtor to help you through this process can dramatically affect your success or your failure. I have personally helped hundreds of buyers and sellers through this process in achieving their dreams and goals in 100 and Somerset County areas over the past 10 years. I believe that this experience should be a smooth, seamless one for you and not a roller coaster ride. But the best judgment as to whether or not I deliver this to my customers is their reactions in their own words.
One of the things we liked about Joe was that he would return calls within minutes if he wasn't able to pick up.
You know, Joe guided us through the process of selling our home and made a complicated transaction appear seamless.
How do I accomplish this? By approaching every transaction from a business perspective. Initially, I try to fully understand your goals and dreams and make them my own. Then, I go out and take the mass amounts of data that we have and distill them down to a few understandable action points to be considered. Finally, I control the entire process through technology to ensure that we're not going to hit any speed bumps along the way. The end result to you is a smooth, rewarding customer experience. Let me show you how to take my level of professional expertise and put it to work for you in achieving your real estate goals and dreams. I can be reached at 908-238-0118. Thanks for your time.
You're listening to WHCR-DB, HuntertonChamberRadio.com. Brought to you by the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce, the voice of business.
All right, welcome back to Good Morning Hunterdon, HuntertonChamber.com. Richard Scuderi is with me. The owner of Maven Hill Designs, host of Modern Design, and now author of The Lonely Boy. It's an interesting question. I don't know if it's interesting as much to you as it is to me. Are you keeping the author and the interior designer separate or together?
They're starting to merge. I was working with a lovely lady in Maplewood, New Jersey last week. And I don't know. You know, the one thing that was a little bit of a disappointment was that the publisher, who is Ingram, Ingram is one of the biggest book providers in the world. Mm-hmm. Accidentally released my transcripts before the book was actually out. So one day I got a phone call from somebody who said that we're reading your book, and I said, I haven't finished it. So how are you reading it? So the publisher accidentally put the manuscript online, so people had gotten that first thing before I was even ready. I mean, the content was the same. It was just edited.
Right.
So people had that first draft of the book, which I'm sure had a couple of things that could have been better, or maybe misspelt words, if you will, even though you spell check quite a bit.
Right.
But one of the things that surprised me was this woman in Maplewood said, I love your book. And I thought, what? What book? It's not out yet. And she said to me, she saw it online, and she ordered it, I think, through her Nook or whatever. And she said, I have a son in grammar school who's having problems. And she says, from the perspective of being a mother, I wanted to see what he was going through. And that's the thing that I liked about The Lonely Boy. It doesn't talk about being a 52-year-old man with being depression. It talks about being a seventh grader with depression. It talks about a 21-year-old with depression. It talks about the levels of maturity that you have in dealing with it at the time. And for her, she thought it was a good book because she was dealing with that lonely boy, that kid,
right.
And she has a kid that has depression. So that was very, if I do nothing else, if I've touched just that one family and it's helped them, then it was good.
Well, worth it.
Yeah, for sure. So it does kind of, to answer your question, it's starting to merge together because people are starting to see it.
So you're going to start giving away a free copy?
I did order some books. They're not giving me one free one. But I'm ordering some books, and I do keep them in my stores now. Yeah. And people do ask them for me, for them, I should say. And it's kind of like merging together a little bit.
Neat.
Yeah.
It's neat. Very many people get to the stage of life that you and I are at, and you're looking for that next move. And
sure.
I constantly talk on this show about legacy. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, what are you leaving? And I think you even mentioned that as part of one of your answers before. That, you know, what's my lot in life? What am I imprinting on people and not just taking up carbon footprint, as you say?
Right, right.
There's all those things that you're doing, though, in concert with this, right? You're starting to help some folks in some speaking
engagements? I felt that now. I have to, you know, qualify that I am not a medical professional. I'm a person who's experienced that. And in conjunction with a therapist that I've been working with, I'm looking to do an outreach program in Hunterdon County. And I'm working with a therapist developing something now where we're going to meet twice a month at a location in the Flemington-Clinton area where people can come for an hour to be free of charge. And people that are struggling with depression that can sort of get it out in a room, we'll have coffee, and we'll talk. And I find for me that in my lowest of lows, just having somebody care about you just is you can't beat it. It's as good as it gets. And, you know, when you're going through terrible depression and you're having the shakes or you're having belabored breathing, knowing that another person also has belabored breathing somehow makes your belabored breathing less scary.
Right. Yeah. So,
we're going to be starting that relatively soon.
So how would people find those events?
The best way to reach me is through my email, and that is, and I'll spell that for you, it's CajunMaven@AOL.com. C as in Charles, A, J, U, N. M as in Michael, A, V as in Victor, I, N, at AOL.com. Or they could contact me at 908-884-0770. I'm hoping to actually, there's a spot in Clinton that I haven't signed any papers with yet, but there's a spot in Clinton I'd like to do. I was part of a, Chris, I was part of a group, I guess about 2 years ago when I was in a worse state with my depression. And they met in Morristown at one of the churches, Catholic churches in the basement. And that person did that for about 6 or 7 months. But he had such depression himself, he couldn't continue the group. But I do think outreach is important. I think if you're going to talk about a topic like that, you have to. You can't stop at a book. You need to sort of be available to people should they need it.
Sure, sure. Well, see, a lot of outreach, a lot of helping. You talked about being an empath. You talked about trying to help people, and it seems like it's part of your destiny now. You know, this book is going to help a lot of people that you may not have even met, but yet you're getting feedback on that. You're going to get into a more face-to-face adventure, not too distant future, and you've been doing that probably intuitively for years as an interior designer.
Well, I appreciate that, and I hope so. I love what I do. I hope it never ends.
Right.
But if I'm known for this, for doing outreach and for being compassionate to people, then I've left a legacy that I think I did something well.
Did you enjoy writing the book?
I absolutely did it, and I miss it already.
Is there another one in your?
Believe it or not, yeah, there is actually. Good. I'm sort of living off the fumes of this, and part of the book and part of my relationship with the publisher is that I do a lot of marketing for the book. So this is the first, and I wanted this to be the first because this is where I have modern design, and I respect you, and I wanted you to be the first.
Well, thank
but
you.
But the book is available at Barnes & Noble. Okay. They partnered with us on The Lonely Boy, and I'm going to start to do some book signings. In fact, I'm meeting with the people at the Bridgewater location later today, and I'm going to be doing a series of book signings at the Barnes & Nobles, and also I'll be doing a joint book signing, but a book signing for new authors at Words, which is the local bookstore in the Maplewood Village in Maplewood, New Jersey. And I'll publish
around the corner from my
shop.
Nice.
So I'll be publishing on my social media. I'll be publishing the dates for if you want to meet me and get your book signed and have a conversation. Those are going to be some of the things that are coming up.
Neat. Sure, it's a possibility, but in anybody's mind. But realistically, any possibility that somebody could contact you and want to make this a TV series, a TV show, a movie.
You know, I really, and I guess my mom said once when I was, this is kind of funny. My mom said once, "Oh, Richard, you have delusions of grandeur." And then I'm a teenager, and my agent calls, not knowing that I had an agent. And she says, "This is Donna Eastman. I'm looking for Richard Scudieri." And my mother goes, "Your agent's on the phone, Rich. I guess you